This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mommy's all right. Daddy's all right. They just seem a little weird. Surrender.
Hey, everybody. Every episode of Krista Makes a Podcast has been amazing and fun, and they're all awesome in their own right. But today's episode was really special to me and near and dear to my heart. I grew up listening to today's guest band as a kid, and still love them as much as I did back then to this day. Less Than Jake covered one of their songs on our 2003 album Anthem, and we had the pleasure of playing with them in May 2017 at a private function in Jacksonville, Florida, at a naval base, and the guys in the band couldn't have been any nicer. Today's guest is none other than Mr. Rick Nielsen, guitarist for Cheap Trick, my first rock and roll Hall of Famer, Rick was a ton of fun, lots of laughs, and he decided to pick Surrender, which thrilled me to no end, and it was a lot of fun to dig into this one. Rick talked about how he's written over 500 songs in his career. He said that every kid he knew growing up thought that their parents were weird. Surrender was written before Cheap Trick had a deal, back when they were just playing clubs. And it wasn't on the first two Cheap Trick albums, even though it was already written, because they had so many songs, they were that prolific. Rick talked about how he had the very first Mellotron in the United States that he bought in 1968 when he went to England. And there's a line in Surrender talking about catching your parents on the couch rocking and rolling, and you can read between the lines with that one. So Rick brought up walking in on parents having sex, and he claims that he was there watching my parents have sex when they were conceiving my brother. Okay, Rick. For all this and much more, stay tuned.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista Makes a Podcast.
As our listeners know, we have a guest each week that comes on, and they pick a defining song from their career. And Rick chose Surrender, which I couldn't be more jazzed about. I have a lot of history with this song that we'll get into. Amazing song, came out in 1978 on the record Heaven Tonight. Rick, set us up here. Can you take us back to when you penned the song?
Let's see. I was in my apartment, writing songs. Where my two kids that I had then were like one and two, or three and four, something like that, or three and five. I'm not exactly. I'd have to go back and do the math again. But sitting in my apartment, and I had an idea for a song, and I've written 500 songs. So let's see. At that time, I'd probably written 100 songs, and it was something that made sense to me. And I had the chorus of "Mommy's all or surrender, don't give yourself away." But "Mommy's all right, Daddy's all right," because I always thought that every kid that I knew thought their parents were weird. and I was no exception.
Right. It's just so your first record, self-titled, and then In Color came out in 77. So between In Color and this record, were you, I mean, I know you guys were just road dogs back then. So you said you were in your apartment when you wrote this. Was it between those records when you were off tour? Were you actively writing for a record, or was this prior? Was this written during the In Color sessions?
No, this was written before. This was written, I think, while we were still playing in clubs.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So you guys,
we didn't have a deal. You know, we were just playing 3 and 4 and 5 sets a night in the clubs.
Right.
I was writing original material for the band.
Interesting, because you guys started in 73, so this is when you're out slogging it in the clubs, and you're just writing all these songs. And was there a reason Surrender was held back from the first record and or In Color?
Well, I guess because we had too many good songs, or too many. We just had too many songs. I don't know if we had good ones or not. Because I Want You to Want Me was written by the time we did the first album, so we didn't put that on there then either.
Right.
So
did your producers have any call in that? I know Jack Douglas did the first record. Jack, of course, is famous for doing a bunch of Aerosmith stuff as well. And then Tom Werman came along for In Color, who he also produced Heaven Tonight, which Surrender's on. Did they have any say? Did they get the demos of these songs and say, I want these songs? Or did you guys, do you remember if you had it like in your head of what you wanted to put forward to record?
Well, yeah, we always had a say-so and stuff, but like I said, we had I think when we did the first album, I think we did I think it was till 27 tracks in 7 days. It's like we just do the basic demos or whatever, and like I said, Jack, he liked Daddy Should Have Stayed in High School, you know, as opposed to a song like Surrender, I Want You to Want Me, you know, it was kind of like, he thought that was weird enough and cool enough. And, it's like, I don't think we even thought anything of it. You know, we had enough songs where it's like, whatever they say, you know, we hope to be making more records. So if it didn't make it on this record, we'll do it on another record.
Sure. And I mean, and when you were doing this, the 70s were a different time. I mean, bands were still allowed to be developed. It wasn't like you got one record and if you didn't have a hit, you were done. So you kind of had.
Well, we weren't looking like it was a sure thing that we'd be able to record more. But
right. So, yeah.
So it wasn't like a sure thing. It's like, all right, here we have a chance to make a record. And the minute we got done with the record, we just went back to playing. We just always played. So it's like, we'd hone those other songs while we're working on the clubs. But really, Cheap Trick, we really didn't hone stuff. And I'd write a song and we'd just do it. And, it's like, sure, they progressed or whatever by bits, but not so much. I mean, we were like, it's like even today. I mean, we still to this day, we like when we record, we usually only do maybe 2 takes of a song. We're pretty good at it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I wanted to ask, you kind of touched on it. So when you were doing these songs in the clubs, you wrote Surrender and you were taking it out and playing it. It sounds like the song didn't change too much from when you got it in the studio in terms of, there might have been production things, but arrangement and lyrically, it was pretty much there.
Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, we didn't go and, well, we only have one verse. So it's like, until they were flushed out with, verse, chorus, bridge, whatever, we didn't do them. They were finished or they weren't done.
Gotcha. Do you remember the response when you would play this back before it was ever released? And I'm assuming when you say you were slogging it out in the bars, this is everywhere from Rockford to Chicago, or were you going out of state at this point?
Oh, we went all over the place. I mean, we had a residence. We played in Minot, North Dakota, 7 nights a week, 5 sets a night at a place called the Dutch Mill, and we'd have to go out and play. And we didn't like to repeat stuff, But we, you know, sometimes we had to. We'd, you know, maybe do Surrender in the first set and then do we do it in the last set. And so, yeah, it would, and sometimes we'd be playing to nobody. You know, there'd be nobody there, too.
Right. Well, I mean, that's how obviously how you guys cut your teeth. And I mean, you had to be players back then, because if you weren't a good player, they'd find a session player to come in the studio because there was no Pro Tools. Everything was to tape. You had to be good. I mean, you guys were out busting your humps, you know, in the bars. And that's a lost art. Bands don't do that anymore. Go play five sets. And back then, of course, you know, the bar owners want to keep people drinking in there. So they want you to be a covers band a lot of time. Did you find resistance when you would try to throw in an original?
Oh, yeah. We always found trouble there. We always told people we'd do, you know, we'd do cover songs. For us, we really never played the top 40, that kind of stuff. If we played a song by anybody, like Rolling Stones or David Bowie or whatever, we'd always try to do the B side, you know, because they were just as good as the A sides back then. and then people thought we were more original because they'd never heard the thing, but it was reminiscent of, you know, something, you know. So, you know, I'm just trying to say, you know, we had. We did like some blues kind of songs. We did Oscar Brown, you know, the song I used to do. I used to sing this one. It was called "I Was Cool."
Okay.
I used to do that, and I had a violin solo in it. You know, it's like we just and we carried a piano with us too, a little tiny upright that I wish I still had, but because I used to play piano on stuff.
Was there any thought when you were slogging it out five nights, seven nights a week in these bars? Obviously there was the love of music. You were young. It was exciting. But was there ever any thought of like, we want to get signed? We want to take this to the next level?
Well, say like from 73, 74, in 1968, the band, we were signed in 1968 to Epic Records. It was Tom and I and three other guys, and I was playing Mellotron and guitar. I had the very first Mellotron in the United States that I bought in 1968 when I went to England.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
was that the band? Was that Naz?
No, that was Fuse.
Fuse.
We were called the Grim Reapers, and then the record label changed our name to Fuse.
Okay.
And so I already had a record deal. It came out in 1969, and it went nowhere. And but we played, that band played, and then I ended up moving to Europe, and you know, yada yada. You know, years passed. So by 73 and 74, you know, I'd already had a taste of failure. So I wanted some more failure.
you were a glutton for rock and roll punishment.
Yeah. So you know, it's like. I knew I was good enough, and the guys that I wanted to play with were good enough, but you know, that didn't mean success. And when Cheap Trick finally came out, I mean, that was an era of disco, and so we just wanted to play, especially me, I guess, because I've always been in the band. I've never been kicked out of any band I've been in. I should have been, but I wasn't.
So you're in your apartment and you wrote this song. I know you said you had the lyric Surrender, and you thought your parents were weird.
My parents were, every parent was weird.
Every parent. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're that age.
Yeah. You know, it's like, hey, you want to go to my house? No. And, you know, the parents would be there. It's like, yes, you know, it felt like Eddie Haskell. Yes, Mrs. Cleaver, you know, it's like, but I was never like that. I was never like, you know, I was thrown out of band in seventh grade because I couldn't keep my mouth shut.
Right. It's just, I guess my question is this written from experience? Was this kind of innate? Okay. So it's for experience, because the lyrics are fascinating, because I've heard the song a million times. I've sung the song. I love it.
Yeah, I know you guys did it.
Yeah. Yeah. We covered
less than Jake.
We
covered less than Jake.
for our listeners that don't know, we Les and Jake covered Surrender on our 2003 record Anthem, and that was a suggestion from our producer Rob Cavallo. I don't know if you know Rob or not.
Well, I know Rob. Yeah.
Yeah. So Rob suggested that, and I want to get into that later because I have something to talk about with that that's very interesting. But just touching on the lyrics right now, it's fascinating to me, Rick, because I could never write a lyrical piece such as this. I kind of know what it means, but I don't. So I'd like to kind of get into this if we could. Mother told me, yes, she told me, this is the first verse, that I'd meet girls like you. She also told me, stay away. You'll never know what you catch. Just the other day, I heard of a soldier's falling off some Indonesian junk that's going around. Now, I'm assuming Indonesian junk is referring to heroin. But the rest of this, like, what was the impetus behind this being the first lyric? Can you set it up? Do you remember?
Yeah, that's kind of like a take on like a Chuck Berry or Fats Domino or Jerry Lee Lewis. Mother told me, rock and roll. Yes, she told me, I'd meet girls like you. You know, it's like, all right. It's like, let's go to the hop. Let's go. It's like, there was just some common lyric. And then I think in the second half of the first verse, I'd meet girls like you, but you better be careful because, there's all this stuff going around out there. You like that back in the day, you might end up like Al Capone getting syphilis. What? It's like, but at that time, it's like, and she told me, I mean, girls like you, well, you might get like that, or that it was kind of the Vietnam era when I was writing this. Uh-huh. Some Indonesian, it could have been COVID-19, some stuff that's going around. Be careful while you're at this, be cautious here. So that's what I was kind of trying to get across. And when I was writing, it was like some Indonesian junk. Okay, yeah, the heroin thing, or some an Indonesian junk is a boat. It's a little bit of each of that. It's like I try to tie the one in with the other. Some Indonesian junk just going around, floating around the bay or floating around in the water. Like my mind kind of. I start off looking for a girl, and before you know it, I'm on a boat in the South China Sea.
That's what I mean here. I mean, that is just.
Well, I should also say, Chris, I'm glad you didn't write it because I didn't want Cheap Trick to copy Les and Jake. Come on.
I know, right? That'd be so lame. No, I got a smile from ear to ear right now, Rick, because it's just I'm looking at these lyrics and as I'm talking to you and hearing you explain this, it's just it's fascinating, getting to a lyric from it, which is now that I look at it, it's very and it comes from a different place than I come from because I grew up in a different era. You came from the 50s, 60s rock and roll, and I could see the mother told me, yes, she told me, but then from there. 8 lines later, you get to some Indonesian junk going around. I could never get from there to there in a song and make it have some kind of semblance of making sense. And it's just having the double entendre of Indonesian junk could mean a number of things. The boat thing,
yeah,
yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's how I wrote it. I wasn't thinking that I'd be doing an interview with you 50 years later. It's like this is how my mind was working.
Oh, that's great. So then,
and plus, it's like I didn't want to have every song. I love you. You love me. Let's go get let's go get laid or let's get married or let's go. Like I tried to not write the typical song.
Right, which a lot of bands were doing then. I mean, of course, as you mentioned a moment ago, you had the disco craze, and then the late 70s, the punk thing came, and then you had all your album-oriented rock bands, your Styx, your Bostons, and all that.
We never tried to be anybody else. We weren't sure that – I always tell people, I never wanted to be anybody else, but I'm not sure I wanted to be me, but there you go.
No. And it's, you know, this kudos to you guys. I mean, you know, it's Cheap Trick when you know, you hear Robin's voice, you hear the songs, and it's undeniable. Yeah. Nobody sounded like you. There might've been people that tried to emulate it, but you guys had your own thing. So we get to the first chorus and you know, your mommy's all right. Your daddy's all right. They just seem a little weird. Surrender. So, you know, but don't give yourself away.
Yeah. Give up, give in. I know they're weird, give in a little bit, but that way you get away with more stuff. You know, if you tell your parents no, and you know, screw you, I'm not going to do this. So you surrender, but don't give yourself away. You know, keep it cool. Be the real you, but, you know, it's to negotiate is a give and take. It's not all you get. Yes, they're always right. You're always wrong. You're always right. They're always wrong. No, it's a give and take.
And now, you know, you guys were just at this point, you're firing on all cylinders. You're just, you know,
What in the clubs playing to nobody? No. We were.
And I meant from a creative sense. You're firing all cylinders. So when you would show this particular lyric, if you remember, to the band, what did they think? Do you remember their reaction? Did they think it was great? Did they say, what the hell does this mean? Or did they, you know, what was the reaction?
Well, we got along pretty well. You know, we still do. He's like, you know, it's like, yeah. Nobody else challenged me to write songs at the time.
Right. Okay. And then we get into the second verse. Father says, your mother's right. She's really up on things. Before we married, mommy served in the WACS in the Philippines. And the WACS was the Women's Auxiliary Corps.
Women's Army Corps.
Yeah, Women's Army Corps. Excuse me.
One of my aunts was that. All my parents and all my aunts and uncles, they were all, you know, World War II type, were all in the armed services of some sort. And okay. my aunt Ruth, she was a WACS.
I'm I look at this and I'm kind of at a loss for words. It's just, so how did your brain get to talk about this in the second verse from where the first verse was?
Well, you know, first verse, mother told me. And then the second verse,
father says your mother's
father
right.
Father says, yeah, your mother's right. You know, so you listen. First you listen to your mother, then your father, you listen to him. Father says your mother's right. She's really up on things. Before we married, she's earned a WACS in the Philippines. So she, you know, she's been around the world. She's done it. She knows what's cooking.
That's awesome. And it says, now I heard the WACS recruited old maids for the war. But mommy isn't one of those. I've known her all these years.
Yeah, you know, it's like, so I heard that WACS recruited old maids to be in the army. You know, you think about guys in the service in the Second World War or any war. You know, they had their pinup girls. Their pinup girls were not, you know, they were hot, whatever. They weren't service women dressed up in uniforms like that. So. You know, it was a play on just an observation.
Okay. Yeah. Which, I mean, back then, I mean, it was different. There wasn't as many women that are in the military, or wasn't accepted like it was today.
Yeah. So that's where that verse was coming from.
Okay. And then we, of course, get into a second chorus. And before we go any further, which I want to get to the rest of the lyrics, but let's talk a little bit about the key change, because the song begins in B flat major with an immediate key change to B. Do you remember how that came about?
Yeah, it's like, otherwise the whole song would be linear if it stayed in, you know, like Louie, uh-huh. Da, 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 you know, it never changes. That's all right, but this song is just to keep building up. It sounds like it builds up, but actually just the key modulates. And you can't do that in every song, but this was the perfect song to do it, because it starts off kind of like a chorus anyhow. Da, 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 then it jumps up. It's just, you know, I knew music well enough where I thought that that should happen.
Yeah, and I've done that sometimes in songs that I've written, but sometimes they'll start out, as you said, linear, and then I'll be like, man, this is too linear, or too, it needs a little more pizzazz, and I'll put, do you remember if the song was linear and you decided to do this later, or was it written exactly like that from the beginning?
I'm not exactly sure about that.
And then, of course, it's in B then, B major for most of the song.
For two verses and two choruses.
Yeah. And then near the end, we go up to C. And then that's where we're at the next verse. And it's whatever happened to all the seasons, losers of the year. Every time I got to thinking, where'd they disappear? But when I woke up, mom and dad are rolling on the couch, rolling numbers, rock and rolling, got my Kiss records out. And Kiss, their first record came out in 74. So this song would have had to have been written between 74 and when it came out. You said it was written before you guys had a deal.
Yeah, I think I added the word Kiss records, rock and rolling, got my records out or whatever. Uh-huh. It may have been like that, but I'm thinking, what is the ultimate slap in the face at that time? You know, it's like, here's your parents, they're listening to it. They're rolling around on the couch and they're listening to you.
Your
Kiss records, oh my God. You know, it's like, well, then, you know, a couple years later, oh my God, they got my, it was probably, you know, like having my Rolling Stones records out, you know, or the bad boys of rock and roll of that season or that era, you know, whatever, you know, got my Marilyn Manson records out. Got my Ozzy Osbourne. But it's like Kiss is like the ultimate parents. Like, oh my God, you can't be listening to this stuff. Or look at these guys. You know, it's like Alice Cooper. I mean, it could have been any of that stuff. But Kiss kind of really fit the bill.
Well, which was great because you guys did a bunch of tours after that with Kiss. You know,
and now it's, I think we can say got my Kiss records out, and I would throw a Cheap Trick record out.
Well, and as you said, Kiss were, I mean, either they were adored and loved by the masses, you know, the teenagers. It was so huge, such a phenomenon. No one was doing what they were doing back then, or they were absolutely hated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, just think about it. You know, it's like the ultimate. It's like, oh, my God, I walked in and my parents were happy. Oh, no, God. You know, it's like. It's like George Costanza, you know, his mother walked in while he's jerking off, you know, it's like, oh God. And it's like, oh, this is the worst thing on earth.
And, oh my God. That's great. That's great.
Hey, Chris, did you ever walk in on your parents when they were trying to conceive something besides you?
Evidently I did when I was about two, but I don't remember. My parents told me, yeah, that they, I walked in when the deed was happening. Maybe they, and my brother's 2.5 years younger than me. So maybe that's when they were making my bro. I don't know.
Yeah, it was. I was there watching.
Oh my gosh, this is great. I can't wait to tell my parents. I'm going to call them later and let them know. You know, Rick Nielsen was outside the window.
Rick Nielsen was there? Well, if you think about it, where I used to live, I lived in Elmhurst, Illinois, and the next door neighbors were the Byermans, and he was the editor of the Elmhurst paper or whatever it was, and they had a shower in their basement, and I used to look in their window well, because he had twin daughters, and so here I'm 7 years old, and I thought that was fascinating.
sounds like it.
Did I still remember it? Yeah,
you had your own peep show. And in fact, Illinois is not that far from where my parents and I lived at that time. We were living outside of Detroit, Michigan. So, which I know you guys have a rich history with over the years. So going back to the top line here again, backtracking, whatever happened to all this season's losers of the year? What is that referring to?
Well, it meant a lot of things. Whatever happened to the season, you know, all the people that you grew up with, that, you know, whatever happened, everybody thinks you're the loser, But then you think everybody else is a loser. You know, like, oh, what a loser that guy is. And then they're looking at me. Instead of going out for sports, I'm playing in a rock band. What a loser.
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities, from easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock. DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
You know, it's like, it was a bit of each of that, you know, the same dichotomy of surrender. Mommy, you know, it's like, mommy's all right, daddy's all right, you know, okay, who's right? Am I right that I stayed in a rock band? Are they right that they went out for sports and they're a jock? That they, you know, it was kind of like I guess a dichotomy of whatever happened to those losers. Well, we're not the losers. We're, you know, I'm playing in a rock band. I thought it was a badge of courage or a badge of coolness, where others think it was like a badge of, you know, what are you doing this for? Well, how come you're not studying harder?
Yeah, that is too cool, which leads into the next line, which you kind of just, now I kind of get it. Every time I got to thinking, where'd they disappear? So yeah. You're thinking of these losers, like, well, where the hell did where'd old Bob go? I wonder whatever happened to him.
Yeah, well, yeah, and then turn it around. They're looking at me, where'd those losers go? They went nowhere. Oh, now, oh, whether, you know, I went to my 25th high school reunion, and I was like, hello, Richard. What have you been doing? You know, it's like, oh yeah, yeah. You know,
it's like, how the hell could they not have known?
Well, some of them did, because they were, you know, they weren't listening to rock records or you know, they weren't, you know, not that I'm any better than anybody else, but it's like, I stuck to what I was going to do, you know, and it's like, so Rick, what's new? What year would that have been?
Mid-80s.
92. Okay. And I graduated in 67, so it's like, I went, you know, 25 years later, you know, I'd already been to Budokan and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, by that time, you know.
But some people thought it was interesting, you know, like the girl that was like the loosest girl in high school shows up with a couple other good looking women, and she was a doctor, and said, my God, you know, it's like, you know, I always say, you know, the ultimate person to meet years later is like, she's hot, she's loose, she's a doctor, and she lives above a liquor store. You know, it's like, you know, the ultimate girl.
This is great. When I woke up, mom and dad are rolling on the couch, and this is when you walk in, your senior folks are rolling numbers, which I'm assuming is that a joint reference, or what is that reference? Rolling numbers.
Okay.
Okay. we'll go with that. And rock and rolling. We know what that means. And then they're listening to your Kiss records, which is, now you're aghast.
Yeah, you're rolling. They're rolling around on the couch. They're rolling numbers. and got my Kiss records out. You know, it's the horror. It's like, you already said what you think or what I think about it. You know, it's the ultimate. You know, you're listening to your parents for advice. Mother's right. You know, mother told me watch out, and here they are. They're just as weird as you are, or weirder.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's the wow moment, because, you know, I've heard this song, I don't know how many times in my life, always loved it since I was a young kid. And
you haven't heard it enough.
No, I mean, now I'm going to listen to it, and I'm going to hear it a whole different way, which I know the listeners are going to get just a kick out of this, because, and that's why I'm so fascinated with songwriting and breaking it down like this, because,
besides you, Chris, and the other Chris, who else listens to your podcast?
Well,
that's about it, huh?
Yeah, that's about it. Actually, we're doing really well. We got some great viewership. But the great part about this podcast is it's not time sensitive. It's going to be out there forever on my page, so people will be able to check. I know. I'll be held liable for years.
People ask me about guitar collecting. I said, well, you know, I'm like anybody else. I started with one. You know.
So I want to kind of talk a little bit. We mentioned a little bit ago about Rob Cavallo. So when we were doing the Anthem record, Rob had suggested, he said, hey, you know, we should cut a cover for this. And we said, okay. He's like, you guys got anything in mind? And we're like, well, not really, you know, and our band's always done covers. We love doing renditions of songs. And Rob, he had suggested two songs, and one of them was Born to Run, which I love Born to Run by Springsteen, but the other one was Surrender, and Surrender just seemed to be a little more, I don't know, in our wheelhouse in terms of that maybe we could pull off a rendition of it.
It's not like an adult song like Born to Run.
Right. I think that had a lot to do with it. Well, yeah, it was a little more, I don't want to use the word rock and roll, but
more fun.
Yeah, more fun. And so when we did it, we started to cut it, and I was playing a couple chords wrong. Rob actually, he picked up the guitar and he's like, no, it's like this. And he's showing me all the weird suspended chords and stuff that you're doing. And we go to cut it, and he says, I don't want to do the ending like on Heaven Tonight. And I said, what are you talking about? He's like, well, you ever heard the Budokan version? I'm like, yeah. He's like, when's the last time you heard it? I'm like, I'm not sure. He's like, go listen to it. And I went and listened to it. I'm like, oh, there's like this extended, really cool ending that we ended up recording on our record. We did the Budokan version. Was that written initially that you scrapped in the studio, or was that just a live thing?
Oh, it was, you know, we did it live like that, you know, like in the studio. Werman didn't think that, you know, we just did it and just faded out, you know.
Gotcha. So it wasn't something that you thought needed to be on record. It was just, and was that the way you were playing it back in the clubs, and how you had written it?
Yeah, I think so. You know, because you know, we're all right. We're all, you know, that you know, you get the hook of the song enough times, it's like, yeah. The audience, you know, by then when we were playing it, you know, it was kind of a. It's easy enough and it's catchy enough where people have kind of got it right away.
Sure. You know,
So we made a big deal of the ending.
Yeah. And the Budokan version is just, it's just so killer. And that's why we ended up doing it like that. And now I can't imagine it not being that way, because it's so powerful and such a great ending. And it ends on that weird, like B suspended chord, which is just so cool.
C, excuse me.
Thank God you're here. Gosh.
Yeah. But my interview is better when I'm here. And it's sometimes worse when I'm here.
No, it's awesome. When you wrote this, and of course you record it, the song was released in June of 78. It was the first Cheap Trick single to enter the Billboard Top 100, peaking number 62. It's on the radio. You're hearing this song. Do you remember the first time you heard it on the radio? And what were your thoughts?
Probably the first time I heard it, I thought it was a good idea. but you know, I don't remember when I heard it.
Yeah. And did you have any idea that you'd be talking about it for 42 years later to some knucklehead, you know, from a punk band?
Well, I'm a knucklehead, so, you know, probably be mumbling and talking to myself. So, you know, I don't know. It's like, Surrender is kind of like, when I've been asked about it, I said, it's kind of like Stairway to Heaven. You know, it was never a hit. It was a turntable hit. Everybody kind of knew it, but it didn't chart, you know, that well. So, but everybody kind of knew it, and look at the accolades we've gotten for it, and we're still playing it today. So.
And it's unreal. And I mean, just the cultural phenomenon that it's become, like you said, it was just kind of like an album song and you didn't think much of it. It was just another one of those songs you were writing when you were slogging it out in the bars and the clubs back in the early 70s. And it's just, continues to take on a life of its own. I can't tell you how many bands I know that have covered the song. It's just, it's tons, because it's just such a great song.
I played it with Pearl Jam. I played it with, what's it? Foo Fighters.
Yeah, I was going to say probably with Foo Fighters.
let's see, who else? Green Day. You've heard of them, right?
I'm sorry, say that again.
I said Green Day.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, my audio cut out. Green Day, of course. Yeah, no, yeah. I know yeah, Billy. Yeah. Billy.
Yeah. Whenever I say something good, you say the audio cut out. So you can take credit for
exactly. No, of course. Yeah, no, Billy Joe from Green Day is a huge Cheap Trick fan. And
I got a story about that.
Let's hear it.
My next door neighbor was like a fan, and she actually ended up marrying one of the guys from their original record label. And they were traveling in a van in the early days, and they came and they stayed at my very next door neighbor, and her mother, they were Swedish, and she was going to, you know, clean their clothes and give them a place to stay and a shower and all that stuff, and she played the accordion for them, and they found out that I lived next door, and they came over to my house. We were, of course, on tour. And they left they signed a 45 and left it in my back door. They played with my dog, I guess. And they said that, Rick, we're big fans. This is our new record. I think it's Outlook Records.
Lookout Records. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Lookout Records. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she ended up marrying one of the guys from Lookout Records, not the mother, but the daughter.
That's great. Well, yeah, Billy's, he had a side band in the early days with Green Day. They were called Pinhead Gunpowder, and they covered Surrender. They're one of the bands that I was talking about a little bit ago. So that was one of the first covers I had heard of the song. I had the Pinhead Gunpowder 7-inch years ago that was on Lookout Records. So the fact that they left you a record at your house, and of course you were on the road because you guys are road dogs. You're still out there. I don't know how many shows, 150 shows a year. Still killing it, which is just such an inspiration to all touring bands that, you know, and of course, congratulations on getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that was good, huh?
It's amazing. I'm proud of you guys. It's just testament to who you are. You guys just, you know, I read a quote years ago from Steven Tyler. What's the number one advice you can give in the music business? He said, you got to ride the highs just like you ride the lows. You know, you got to, and the business is such a tough business. And the fact that you guys have been able to maintain all these years.
I always tell people, I said, you know, it's like, if we had to wait to have a hit record to tour, I said, we never would have toured. You know, you just got to go out and do it.
No, and you guys did, and I got to tell you, you know, as a fan, you know, my and to the listeners out there, Cheap Trick is one of those bands that I strive. I look at you guys, and I always say that I haven't written my best song yet because, you know, your early stuff has all those memories attached to it that people love those songs for a number of reasons. They're great songs, etc. But you guys continue. My top three Cheap Trick songs are from all different eras. The first one, of course, out of the three is Surrender. Then from 1985's Standing on the Edge record, Tonight It's You. And then from the 2016 Cheap Trick record, Bang Zoom Crazy Hello, the song No Direction Home. Those are my top three. And you guys have a lot of damn good songs.
there's three.
No, but I mean, that is so cool to, there's not a lot of bands, and I mean that, you can span from 78 to currently and love songs from all their eras. It's like, their old stuff's really good, but their new shit sucks. You know, how many times have you heard that?
Every time we put out a record.
Oh my gosh. Well, Rick, I love how humble you are. I love the fact that we've got to play with you guys. Les and Jake played with Cheap Trick in 2017 at the Naval Base in Jacksonville, Florida. And Rick let me play his amazing Explorer that was used, played at Budokan, and you see the checkerboard guitar and tons of videos, etc. I got to play it. He handed it to me on the side of the stage. I blown away, can't believe it. Of course, I've got to be friends with your son Dax, now the drummer of Cheap Trick, Dax Nielsen, and Dax invited me to a show. I brought my dad out to meet you, and you guys couldn't have been more accommodating and just wonderful people. Thank you.
Well, that's not going to happen again.
You got your one chance.
That's right. Well. Thank God you didn't break it. I'd be still pissed at you.
I know, right? Well, man, and I got to hold the five neck guitar. That guitar is just iconic, and I got to put that over my shoulder and hold it. That is just amazing.
I used to be 2 inches taller.
Sure, that thing weighs like 100 pounds. Yeah. Rick, is there anything you'd like to leave listeners with? What you're up to? Would you like to plug anything?
Yeah, buy your buy the Anthem record by Les and Jake. That way, I get a penny royalty. No, I don't know. I don't have anything to say.
Well, I think you've said it all, man. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to speak to me. It means a lot, and you're one of my heroes. You're an icon. And
stop it! You tell my wife this stuff, you know.
I was going to say congratulations on all your success.
My success. I've been married for 50 years and I haven't killed her or she hasn't killed me yet. There's success for you. Or lack of success.
There you go. There you go. You're doing something right and wrong.
Yeah, there you go. I like that.
Yep. All right, Rick. Thank you so much. Have a great day, okay?
All right. Let me know when this plays again, but next time get me the right information in advance.
I'm not gonna
blame you. I'm gonna blame the other Chris.
Yes,
he's quiet like he should be.
Exactly. I blame him for everything too. All right, Rick, thank you so much. Tell Dax I said hello.
I'll tell Dax you said hello.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know, where each week I will preview a select band of my choice that you may or may not know. If you'd like your band to be previewed on Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is submit your song and bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. Again, that's bandyoumightnotknow, all one word, @gmail.com. All I ask for is a good quality recording of a song you feel best represents your band. This week's band is JDR and The Broadcast. They're a Midwestern rock and roll band from Aurora, Illinois, and usually I like to give the band members names and corresponding instruments, but I could not find who plays what in this band. band or their names anywhere online. So if you submit your band to be previewed on Krista Makes a Podcast for a band you might not know, please tell me who plays what and what all your names are, because I don't know, I feel like it adds a little human element to this, and who doesn't like to hear their name said over the radio? Their latest record is called No Winning Hands. It was released this year. I really like these guys and their sound. Very honest Americana rock and roll that takes me back to the mid to late 70s. Really good stuff. Visit JDR and the broadcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and listen to them on all digital and streaming music services. Here's a snippet of their song, Jesse James.
And if you're gonna go, go tomorrow ain't yesterday. If you got a home, go back and just stay. If you're gonna rob trains, rob them like Jesse James. Like Jesse James.
The Wrap with Chris and Chris.
So that was pretty cool, man. Your first Rock and Roll Hall of Famer guest.
Yeah, really, really special episode for me. Just a lot of history with this band, and yeah, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer. I didn't know in this is the 15th episode that we'd have a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer that quick, but I was honored to have Rick on the show, and he's a funny character.
Yeah, man, he's pretty entertaining and pretty wild, and I could imagine that he was even wilder in his younger days. But the dude is an absolute beast of a songwriter, and you know, Cheap Trick and bands of the like from the 60s and 70s, they paved the way for bands like Less Than Jake.
Yeah, they certainly did. I mean, you know, by 1979, you know, if you're looking at, I don't know, late 50s rock and roll starting, late 70s, rock and roll was still 20 years old. It was in its infancy. I mean, it's crazy to think that. And, you know, Cheap Trick were a full 10 years before that, slogging it out in the clubs, playing, you know, 4, 5, 6 sets a night. And most of the club owners then wanted you to play cover songs because that's what kept people dancing and drinking. And these guys would you know, try to slip in an original here and there, and they wanted to write original music. And that was all kind of new then. You know, just him telling stories about that time period was fascinating.
You and I experienced a whole different thing. It was putting out our own music. Yeah, maybe we'd cover a song in the style of punk rock or something once in a while, but we released our own original music and we hit the road, tried to find ways to market ourselves, and weren't doing cover sets or, you know, multiple sets in a night. That wasn't really a thing that we really ever had to do. But I do think there are bands that still do that. I still hear stories, and I personally know some people that will play cover sets, but deep in their heart, they have original music on their mind, or might slip one or two in. But I don't know, was that even an option in like the 60s and 70s to just start that way, just write original music and hit the road?
I just don't. Yeah, that's a great point. I don't think there was scenes. It wasn't like now where, you know, we're a punk band or we're a ska band or we're an indie band and we're going to go find like-minded bands in different cities to tour with. It didn't exist, you know? So, yeah. You had to, as I say, slog it out in the clubs. You had to go locally first and start playing. And then you'd branch out, like, you know, Cheap Trick was from Rockford, Illinois. They'd probably started there, and then they'd take weekend trips to Milwaukee or into Chicago and, you know, go over to Ohio and play and just break out regionally. And then from there, keep doing their thing, as far out as they can get. And you know, what was crazy about, you know, Rick was talking about, they had Surrender written. They were playing that in the clubs for years before they ever recorded the song.
Right. So, you know, you or I might have the experience of writing a song, maybe playing it at a practice space, recording the song, but not actually playing it live until it's out on an album. Whereas back then, you probably played the song 500 times live before you ever even went in the studio and recorded it. So you had a lot of natural working out of things in songs. So, you know, those guys probably went in the studio with these songs so thought out, at least among themselves, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I think it was Tim Reisigans we were talking on his episode about, you know, you go record songs, but you never learn them as a band. You have to actually, like, learn them from your own recording, which Cheap Trick wasn't doing that. They were playing these songs, and, you know, he even said that Surrender was written, but it was left off the first two records because they had so much material. Which is crazy to think. Yeah, you know, just myself, growing up with Cheap Trick, you know, listening to them in the car with my dad on the way to, Little League games, and they were just a big part of my life. And then of course, when Less Than Jake went to do the Anthem record, our producer, Rob Cavallo, had suggested, hey guys, you know, we should maybe do a cover. And we didn't really have any ideas, and there was two in the running. One was Bruce Springsteen's Born to Run, which is just such an iconic song. I couldn't even imagine tackling that, not to take anything away from Surrender, but we just felt Surrender was a little more up our alley, and we could pull it off. You know, we covered the song, and then, you know, as I mentioned in the intro, we got to play with Cheap Trick in May 2017 in Jacksonville, Florida, which was beyond amazing. Got to meet the guys, and they are true gentlemen.
Yeah, man, I love the pictures from that. And also, did you know that Punchline had a Cheap Trick connection too, which is a really funny one. Is that in 2012, we were on a television show on Fox hosted by Howie Mandel called Mobbed. It was a flash mob show that Steve was the star of that episode. And we went to LA with this song written, a Punchline song called Universe written, which would have fit perfectly into the song. And we're like, oh man, this is our big break. We're going to get to play our new song in front of millions of people. And this is going to be so awesome. And there's going to be this giant flash mob to it. And then we got out there and they're like, no, you got to do a song that people know already. And we were like, damn it. And we ended up doing I Want You to Want Me, which if you have to do a cover song, that was a pretty cool one to do. We learned it. We did a pretty cool version of it, I thought, which is still out there and everything. So, yeah, both of our bands have played some Cheap Trick.
That's cool. Yeah, there could have been a lot of other really bad songs they wanted you to play. So I think you guys got lucky with that one.
Yeah, for sure.
but yeah, I mean, overall, just knowing, and there was so much more in the episode that I wanted to talk to him about, because of course I try to keep the theme to songwriting, but I could have talked to Rick for probably 3 hours. It's so many questions, just because he's such a wealth of knowledge, and you know, he was doing this 30 years before I ever even got started, which is awesome.
Yeah, you probably could have talked to him about everybody ever. You could have been like, hey, tell me about when you hung out with John Lennon, or tell me about tell me about Springsteen, or tell me about Linda Ronstadt. You could have brought up anybody, and that guy would have had a story about it. So yeah, you could have done a 12-hour episode with him, and it probably would have never got boring.
Right, right. Well, if you don't mind, Chris, I'd like to pin something on the listeners right now.
What's that?
Your Etsy shop, where you make enamel pins.
Oh, damn. That was a good segue, man. Nice.
It was the best I could come up with on short notice.
I didn't even see it coming. But yeah, if anybody likes enamel pins out there, I have an Etsy shop. It's iloveenamelpins.com. And if you use the discount code ChrisDemakes, you'll get 30% off your order. I like designing pins, and that's my little niche thing that I like to do on the side. Yeah, it's iloveenamelpins.com.
Yes, get an enamel pin from Chris. They are fantastic. And there's your shameless plug for the day. I would also like to talk about the charity for this month, for Chris to Makes a Difference. The charity is for Big Brothers and Big Sisters of the Laurel Region, which is in the Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania area. You know, keep those donations coming. We have a goal of $1,000. We're going to be doing one charity a month. You can go to chrisdemakesadifference.com to donate. You know, I know times are tough right now, but every little bit helps.
Yeah, man. You know, we have thousands of listeners every week. Even if you could chip in a dollar, that will help out, because I know them in specific had talked to them. And, you know, everybody's probably behind their fundraising goals for the year this year. And so, you know, even if you could chip in a buck, if everybody chipped in a buck, we'd reach our goal in 1 minute. So that would be really cool. And Chris, speaking of plugs and things, do you want to tell us a little bit about your one-on-one video consultations that you offer?
I would love to. You know, I never thought of myself as the producer in a sense that I'm going to get in a room with a band for a month and start from scratch with songs. It just never interests me. But what I do love doing, and I feel I excel at, is taking your song in the 11th hour. You get it as far as you can take it, and then we'll get on a Zoom call together, and I'll produce your songs live one-on-one in a video session. We can do song collaborations. I could answer any and all questions of the music business. I've been doing a lot of these lately, and they've been great. I really feel like that I've been helping people. And so, yeah, if you'd like more information on this, you can email me at chrisdemakes@gmail.com. And, wonderful episode this week. Can't say enough about it. And hopefully we can get Rick back on, and I'll pick his brain for another hour sometime.
Hell, yeah. There's plenty of good songs to pick from there. So, yeah, man, good episode.
Right on. And thanks for listening. If you haven't already, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. Until next week, we'll see you then.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good
morning. I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon. Again.